Tech of Sports, episode 28 for October 3rd, 2012. Troy University tennis coach Eric Hayes. This week on the Tech of Sports, Eric Hayes. Netcast Studio mobile apps are a great way to receive our content for your smart devices. There's an app for both iOS and Android. And don't forget the Stitcher Radio app. Stitcher Radio, and it's award-winning provider of news and talk radio for your mobile phone and tablet. Stitcher, it's smart radio for your smartphone. And the Tech of Sports is a proud member of the Tech Podcast Network at techpodcast.com. If it's tech, it's here. And the Tech of Sports is a production of Netcast Studio at netcaststudio.com. And don't forget, create responsive video and image sliders in seconds for your WordPress site. Easy to use and saves time. Great for developers, designers, marketers, and bloggers. You can customize it to match any website. See more at netcaststudio.com/slide deck. You can join us every Wednesday at 7 p.m. Eastern, 4 p.m. Pacific at netcaststudio.com/live. Join the chat room and listen to the show live. Welcome, everybody, on Wednesday night. And we're going to talk a little tennis tonight, and we're going to have some fun. And we'll get right to the point here. And just want to, if you don't know, I mean, tennis is more than tournaments like the U.S. Open and Wimbledon. And on the professional level, there's literally hundreds of smaller tournaments played around the globe with players looking to break into the big time of tennis. You'll find junior players and college players and professional players that are maybe on their way back from injury and looking to break back into the top 100 or top 50 in the world. And we're going to talk about that. And we're going to talk about college tennis a little bit, which was got some great press this year at the U.S. Open with a lot of current and former U.S. college players performing well. And we're going to talk about the proposed rule change a little bit that didn't happen, where college players were maybe not going to play a full third set out, and how much controversy and how much attention that got. And my guest tonight is Eric Hayes, the men's and women's tennis coach at Troy University. And he's been a college tennis coach for almost two decades. I don't want to date you there, Eric. And you've also coached juniors and been a great spokesperson for tennis. And you're the tournament director of the tournament coming up this week, the women's professional tournament in Troy, Alabama. And good to have you on, Eric. I'll be probably sick of seeing your face next week about this time.
Thanks for having me, Rick.
Yeah, no problem. Let's talk about the tournament here real quick. And you're the tournament director, which means you do everything, I guess, at the USTA Tennis Classic of Troy. And you guys are now in your 10th year. You got an exciting tournament coming up, exciting little honor you guys are going to get. And it's a labor of love for you. And just talk about what it means to you personally, the tournament, and what it means for the tennis community there and the community as a whole in Troy.
Well, we've, like you said, it's our 10th year, and it all started. I was sitting in McDonald's with my car dealer, Mr. Ken Cox, and Dothan, Alabama has a 50,000 event they've been doing for about 13 years. And he said, why can't we get one of these? And, well, it's evolved to where we are now. And, it's a lot of work. It's a lot of work put in for just 1 week of tennis, but the community loves it. The city's really behind it. Our title sponsor is the city of Troy. And, for a town our size, it brings it in. It's a big economic boost for the city with hotel and food sales and gas sales. And, the tournament's really grown. And it's helped our program out immensely on the women's side from a recruiting standpoint. And it's a level of tennis that's kind of blown people away, as with the players that have come through here.
Yeah, you guys really have had a who's who of players going through there, especially on the American side. Just about any American player that's come up through the years has kind of made a side trip to Troy there at some point. And you got a great facility there, and the university kind of gets behind it a little bit for you guys. And, it's for a small town, it's a pretty good tennis town.
Yeah, it is. There's a lot of interest. It's a pretty big international university. Besides my team of international players, we have over close to 800 to 1,000 international students out of the 8,000. Internationally, tennis is a big sport, so there's, a lot of interest this coming week from all the students, especially the international players and yeah. Students, of course.
Yeah, hopefully we get some students out there and maybe they can get a little rowdy and cheer and turn it into maybe a little international flavor out there. That'd be fun. You kind of do it on a small scale, but you kind of see the work that goes into putting on a sporting event in a tennis tournament. This is a smaller event, but you can kind of appreciate how much work it takes. It's a year-round job a lot for the guys at the big tournaments. And what are a couple of the challenges you face as you're kind of a one-man show trying to put this tournament on each year?
I'd say the biggest challenge is that, we're not the biggest city, so you know, for instance, like Tallahassee has a men's $50,000 challenger, and you know, they've got a transportation committee of a few people, a housing committee of a few people, this and that. I'm basically a committee of one and pretty much do everything. And, you know, the city gives me an employee or two to help out. And my team helps out. But, you know, I think the players really respect the fact that we're putting this tournament on for them. And I think the players really like the fact that it's a college town because, you know, even when they lose on Sunday or Monday, they usually spend a week because they get to practice with my team. They get to, instead of going to Charlotte and Rock Hill the next week, it's a little cheaper to stay here. And basically, whatever they need, we take care of. And maybe I do a little too much or spoil them a little too much, but it pays back later.
Yeah, and a lot of the players are college age themselves, so they can kind of fit in with kind of the atmosphere around a college town. I think they kind of like that. It's something they don't see, and you know, they're coming from Las Vegas and Albuquerque, and they're coming from bigger cities. And if once they get over the culture shock of being in kind of small town Alabama, they like it there, I guess.
Yeah, they do. I mean, they in the past we've had fraternities get involved and you know host some events and parties for them. And next week during the tournament we have a football game on Thursday night on ESPNU against Western Kentucky, and you know we'll have a tailgate for them and get them all tickets, and they enjoy that because we just play our matches during the day from 10 to 4 or 5, so next Thursday night will be a fun time, and we'll get you down there on the field.
Yeah, I want to sit next to a player from Finland or Romania and try to explain American football to him.
Good luck. I do it year round.
I touched on it briefly. Talk about the kind of players that the tournament like this attracts, and how really there's a youth movement going on. A lot of these young kids are bypassing junior tournaments and they're playing qualies and trying to get into these pro tournaments because the competition's so good. And you'll probably see some of that next week.
Yeah, I've noticed the trend in the last couple of years going more towards younger players. You know, on the women's side, the players physically just get stronger at such a young age, maybe not emotionally, but physically. And, you know, there's been a trend there. And, you know, you've seen the entry list. There's a lot of good young American players coming up. I've gotten 5 or 6 calls today from mothers or fathers who are sending their 15, 16-year-old child here on their own to play the tournament. You know, we pick them up, we transport them. It's a good trend. But, you know, I think it also makes these players realize if the pro route is the right route to go, because once you get past a certain time limit, you waste your college experience or opportunity to go to college. So, you know, they're testing the waters.
Yeah, you have to. We'll touch on that in a little bit and how it seems now that college is, at least for a few years, is really looking like a good option for players. And we'll talk about kind of the success some college players had at the U.S. Open. And I guess if fans are coming out and they're going to watch some of the action this week or on the final weekend, what's maybe one thing that a recreational tennis player, a club player, if they come out to the tournament, they should look for or watch that you would tell someone to look out for? Not a player in particular, but maybe, you know, should they watch the pros' footwork? Should they watch their serve, kind of strategy, how they work the points? Is that always something good to watch?
Yeah, I mean, if you're just a novice player coming out to watch, definitely, you know, looking at the flow of a match, whether they're 15, 16, or 30. I mean, we've got 30, 31-year-old players coming. You know, their body language, the match flow, patterns on the court. You know, that's something we're dealing with college players. My main job is a college coach, and I'm dealing with players that hit the ball as hard as a top 100 pro or have the, quote, talent level, but they don't have the discipline a pro has, you know, as far as running patterns, as far as changing direction on the right ball, being patient, being able to grind it out for 3 or 4 hours. You know, I would say look at the discipline these players have, along with things like footwork, along with, it is a whole nother level, but there are negatives and positives to all of them and what they do. Trust me, I see it daily. I've seen it for 24 years.
Yeah, it's similar. This is like if you're a baseball fan, I guess compare this to you have Major League Baseball, maybe you have AAA and AA baseball. This is maybe similar to AAA or AA women's pro tour tennis. I mean, a lot of the people that'll be here have played in the top level, have played in the Grand Slam tournaments, have had results, and they're coming back to play this tournament for some reason, and then you have the up-and-comers coming up, that this is kind of the progression they have to do before they start making it into main draws and playing qualifyings of tour-level events.
Yeah, it's, you know, I kind of compare it to like the Nationwide Tour on golf. It's very similar to that. I mean, we've had players right now in the top 100, I think 15 or 16 players in the top 100 in the WTA rankings have come through Troy. I mean, Valerie Levchenko was in the finals here last year, and she's, I think, top 20 or 20 in the world. We've had Christina McHale, who's seeded in all the Grand Slam events, ranked in the top 30. You know, that's one other thing that the people in town like keeping up with. They like keeping up with the players that come through here and following them in tournaments and as they move up in the rankings. And, you know, it's fun to watch.
Yeah, just as recently as last year, your champion, Ramiro Prandi, she's now in the round of 16 of the premier event in China this week. So she was out 12 months ago. She was there. Vivaro is now top 20. She was there last year. You had Melanie there last year, and you know, you always will see someone. Camila Giorgi was there last year. She's moved up the rankings quickly. There's usually one or two players that'll be there next week that in the next year they'll be a top 60, top 70, top 50 player. So it's kind of fun to watch.
Yeah, without a doubt. You know, a few of these players will be playing all the Grand Slams within the next year and moving up, and it's neat to watch.
And you'll never see him in Troy again.
Yeah, you never know. Well, you know, I'll give you an example. Rebecca Marino won our event.
That's right.
2 or 3 years ago, and I'll be honest with you, she got up to 40, 50 in the world, and I was telling everybody she's a can't miss.
Yep.
But I saw on the qualifying list today, she's in qualifying and
I know
ranked 390 or 370, and you know, she's got to get that 120-mile-an-hour serve in the court. Apparently, she's not.
She's a big talent. Big talent. If she can put it together, she'll be back in the top 50. And we'll just take a quick break here for Amazon.com. And just want to let any listeners know if they're doing any shopping on Amazon with the Christmas holidays coming up, weddings, fall weddings coming up, you can use the affiliate link here, netcaststudio.com/Amazon for any of your needs. There's no extra cost to you, and it helps support the network. It's netcaststudio.com/Amazon. And since we're talking tennis, there's maybe some listeners from Canada. If you brought up Rebecca Marino or the UK, the link is netcaststudio.com. And for the UK, it's Amazon UK, or for Canada, it's /Amazon CA. So don't forget those links, and any help ordering anything through Amazon is appreciated at the studio. Eric, you've mentioned your day job, and we'll put that in quotes. And you're maybe one of the only people left at a major Division I school that is coaching both the men and the women. And that used to be kind of the norm. You saw coaches coaching both teams. You're doing it where most schools now, they have a separate coach for each, and you've been involved with college tennis for a long time at different schools. Talk about how, in the last 20 years, how college tennis has changed for you. What big changes have you seen?
Well, I mean, it's definitely, you know, what I'm doing now was the norm 15, 20 years ago. But, you know, with the Sears Cup and with the all-sports championships, and I'll be honest, you know, the arms game has affected tennis, just like football, basketball, building these big arenas and stadiums and expansions. It's filtered down to tennis, because the APRs are so important, and, you know, national rankings make an NCAA, so it has filtered down to tennis. So, you know, schools have split up programs. They put a lot more money in the budgets. You know, they're enabling coaches to fly all over the world. As you know, college tennis is pretty international. So, you know, because you have ADs now who aren't former coaches like it used to be. You got ADs who now are coming through, you know, one of the biggest majors is sports management at this school and other schools, and their business conscience, and there has to be a level playing ground with every sport. So there's a lot more emphasis on college tennis than there's ever been in the past.
Yeah, but a few years ago, though, and it's been where I went to school, Iowa State, they eliminated their men's tennis program. I think a lot of men's programs really felt the hatchet there a few years ago, and I didn't think that was a real good thing.
No, that's true. Basically, it comes down to Title IX, and, you know, an institution has a decision to make, either add a women's program, add funds to equate the balance of the population of male female students at that university, or which has been done at most schools, is they've dropped programs. Tennis has been hit hard. Wrestling's been hit hard. I mean, look at Arizona in the last couple of years. I think they dropped, I don't know, swimming, diving, or they dropped wrestling. And, you know, University of Arizona is a Pac-10 powerhouse.
And it's too bad on a lot of fronts. A lot of those baseball got hit hard at a lot of schools, too, so especially in the north. I guess since this is the tech of sports, I guess kind of talk about in the last few years how technology has changed your job and how you're on the computer now probably more than you're on the court. And like we're doing, talking on Skype, is Skype a recruiting tool kind of? Is that open up some different ways to see recruits play or talk to recruits? And has technology changed the game a lot for you guys?
Yeah, it has. And I'll be honest with you, you know, when y'all got in touch with me yesterday about doing this on Skype, that was new to me because I didn't know what the heck it was. And I talked to my assistant coach and he kind of got me set up here, and I'm blown away by this because, you know, this is a way to see players play. And I found out today, I talked to a few other coaches. One of my best friends is the coach at Auburn, and I talked to a former coach at Clemson, Chuck Creasy, and yep. This is as long as you stay within the NCAA rules, this is one major way to recruit because, you know, some of us don't have the budgets to fly all over the world and see players. So, you know, what I try to do is sell myself and sell the school. And this is really a good avenue to do that.
Yeah. And you got a good head of hair. So, so you're better off on Skype than some of those coaches I know. So, talk about your school. It's a Division I school. You guys are in the Sun Belt. Kind of talk about maybe the challenges of being at a smaller Division I school. And I know you don't shy away from playing big schools. And I think you kind of use that maybe as a recruiting tool as well. But talk about being underdog to the big boys, and talk about the conference you're in. It's a pretty good tennis conference.
Yeah, it is. And, you know, I've been here actually 10 years myself. We started this Challenger when I took the job here. And we've had success. We won the men's championship in the Sun Belt 2 years ago. And the women's, we formerly were in the Atlantic Sun. We won that in 2005. So we've had some success. You know, it's a catch-22. I've been a coach at University of Kansas and NC North Carolina State. And, you know, when you're there, scheduling is never a problem. Here, we're in a dilemma where, you know, we play our conference schedule, but we want to try to get an at-large bid if we don't win our conference championship. But the better you are at a mid-major school like we are, schools tend to shy away from you a little bit if you're pretty good. They don't want to lose to you. If you have a down year, everyone will play it. But I got the old Chuck Creasy philosophy where, you know, we'll play anyone anywhere, kind of like our football team here, which they'll play anyone anywhere. And I'd much rather have a 12-12 record and be ranked top 50 in the country than be, you know, 24-1 and rank number 75 and let my AD say, hey, great job. You know, one thing Troy's let me do is they funded us well enough. We're fully funded scholarship-wise, travel-wise, to just about play anyone anywhere in the country we want to. But the key is having a good team to do that.
Yeah, probably the most famous example of a guy taking his team playing anyone anywhere was Bobby Bowden when he first started out at Florida State, and he didn't shy away from playing anyone. You saw kind of the dividends that paid off down the road for him, and I think kind of maybe the same thing might apply to you guys. And when I talk to other college coaches here in Atlanta and at Georgia and South Florida and Tennessee, and if you mention Troy University to them, you're no pushover for them. They, you know, some schools, they come into their place and they kind of, you know, throw a lineup out there, let some of the other players play. But all the schools take you guys seriously.
Well, we take pride in that. And, you know, the athletic department as a whole here pretty much is like that, the football team, the basketball team. But, you know, we honestly will play anyone. We open up this year on the women's side at Clemson, at Georgia. On the men's side, we open up at Auburn, Alabama. You know, I sell that as a recruiting tool. I mean, if you're going to come here, we're going to get you physically fit, but we're going to give you the opportunity to play the best players in the country and teams.
Yeah. I'll be in Athens that day hoping to write a big story about a big upset. So we'll see what happens. And you guys got a lot of international players on your team, and some people don't like that. When I talk to some of the recruiting people and you know, other people say you got to do what you got to do. And what's kind of your philosophy behind that? If you have kind of two players that are equal in ability and whatever, and one's an American and one's a foreign player, would you go lean toward the American player at that point? And you just don't have that opportunity sometimes. Is that kind of what the deal is?
Well, I mean, I've been on both ends of it. When I was at NC State, I recruited all American players. You know, I grew up in Clemson, South Carolina. Chuck Creasy was my mentor. And, you know, back in the day, that's all he did. And our biggest booster at NC State, this guy named Bill Burns, owned a bank in Durham. And he said, look, I'll give you this specific amount of money every year, but you better recruit Americans. And we did. We had success. And we made NCAAs after 22 years of never doing it at NC State. But also, you know, when you're at a school like that, you got to kind of take chances on people as well. My athletic director there, Lee Fowler, came on board in the middle of my tenure there and highly recommended I recruit international players. He came from Middle Tennessee when Dale Short was there, had a lot of success. And I said, well, I'm not going to do it. And ultimately it cost me there. And I wish I would have listened to him, because now I'm at a place where we can't recruit the top Americans. And, you know, to be honest, these international players will give their left foot for an opportunity to be over here. And the problem with the American tennis players, not American athletes, is they're a bit spoiled, a few of them. And you get tired of dealing with that. And it comes down to not matter where you're from, but who's hungrier for the opportunity. And I can understand people saying it's American tax dollars going towards education, things like that. But ultimately, if you're winning, people tend to forget that.
I can definitely see your side of it. And I think, you know, I don't know how hard you do it, how hard you recruit the Atlanta area, but there's so many good players here in Atlanta, and a lot of them are interested in playing D1 tennis, and they say they don't get recruited or don't hear from people, and they would be excited to go, I think, to anywhere, and then some of them just don't hear, and they end up playing Division II or, you know, NAIA somewhere because they don't feel they're given the opportunity because, you know, coaches are looking at foreign players or international players before they'll come here. And you guys are so close to Atlanta. Atlanta is such a hotbed. I would think you guys would be able to pluck a few people from the Atlanta area that would really help you guys.
No, and we'd like to. And, you know, believe it or not, I've signed two Americans on the guy's side, one on the girls. But what these American kids have to do is realize they have to do the work, not their coach sending the email, not their coach make the phone call, not their parents send a massive email to 100 coaches saying, coach, you know, they got to put more of an effort into it. You know, the problem with tennis is we got young players who think they're owed something sometimes. They're brought up through that country club atmosphere. A lot's done for them growing up. And it's not just in this country, it's other countries. But these younger players have to learn to do stuff on their own. I get over 100 emails a day from recruits from this country and all over the world. I'm coaching two teams. You know, you have these kids have to do their homework a little more on what they're doing. It's not just about putting up a YouTube video and saying, coach, here I am.
True. Very, very true. Well said.
And we're dealing with 4.5 scholarships on the men's side. As you know, you got to have a team with 8 to 10 players. So every penny's important. And then you got 8 full scholarships with the girls, where there's a lot more opportunity. So the funding becomes involved.
A lot of opportunity for girls. And just touch briefly on what happened this fall with college tennis kind of having success at the U.S. Open and the almost change to get rid of the third set, which was ludicrous in college tennis, and that didn't get passed, thankfully. What did you think about that whole dilemma?
Well, first off, you know, the American players had great success at the Open and other events. And as far as the NCAA legislation, I mean, it caused an uproar. Basically, what the NCAA was trying to do is to make tennis more of a lucrative sport, putting it on TV, getting sponsors, things like that. And they just went overboard, and thankfully it got changed over. You know, we are going to play a third set. We're going to keep the doubles at a pro set. They've already hacked the doubles down from what it was before, because we got to think about the players' development and interest first. That's the most important thing. And then the higher level of player we get, we're going to get people watching. We do have to shorten the format. People don't want to sit out there 4 or 5 hours. So, you know, little things have to be done. But thank God they didn't change, you know, the overall format. There was uproar within the coaches.
Yeah, I agree with you wholeheartedly on that. And also, before you were kind of coaching college, you worked with and traveled coaching some juniors and pro players. And what did you learn from that situation? And is that kind of helped you get where you are today, seeing how the best in the world go about their craft? And you know, what did you learn from that whole experience?
Well, I mean, I was the men's coach at South Florida, and then I worked with a boy named Brian Dunn, who was number one in the world, and that opened up some doors, and I spent 6 years coaching just pro players at the Palmer Tennis Academy in Florida, and I'll be honest, it was awesome. You know, I was working with top 50 players in the world, traveling all over the world, but what I missed out of it was the team concept. I felt like it was more of a, not that I was a travel agent or this or that, but
you were a travel agent.
I was a travel agent. I just miss working with the team. You know, it was fun traveling. And I'll be honest, I made a lot of money. The money was a heck of a lot better coaching pro players than college. But I'm very competitive. I love the team concept of it. I wouldn't trade those 6 years for anything, but I'm really happy to be back in college tennis, especially here in Troy, Alabama.
Yeah, tennis, team tennis and college tennis is really exciting, and it's fun when as the matches get done, the players kind of start rooting for the other players. It's different than people accustomed to pro tennis, where you have a top player, you have his coach, you have his manager traveling with him. Pro tennis is a team sport, but it's a team of, you know, a chef and a fitness trainer and a coach, and it's not really it's not really that college team atmosphere.
No, it's not, and there's pluses and minuses to both. I had a guy, Jared Palmer, won Wimbledon doubles when I was coaching him, and Mike Cut bought me a house or put a down payment down. And, you know, you can't do that in college, you know, because as a pro coach, you get a stipend and you get 10% of their prize money after the second round of a Grand Slam. You know, I do miss that, but looking back on everything, it was fun, but I'm very happy where I am now.
Doing a good job there with the players at a smaller Division I school. And tell the people listening how, if they want to check out your team and follow how they're doing, tell them what website to check out and how they can contact you if they have a top junior player that maybe want you to take a look at.
Well, they can contact me directly at ehayes, E-H-A-Y-E-S, at Troy, TROY.edu. Our website is www.troytrojans.com. That's our athletic website. Our website this week coming up, thanks to you, is troyusta.com. And on that, on our website or email, anyone that gets in touch with me, you know, I'll definitely get back with you. And we're always looking for players, whether they're from down the street or halfway or all the way across the world. We're very open to anything right now.
Yeah, I give Troy a lot of credit. The university, they have a really good website. They're real proactive on social media for their athletic teams. Your athletic department, which isn't, you know, the same size as an athletic department at University of Georgia or Florida or Alabama, they do a great job with social media and keeping your fans and alumni informed on Troy sports. It's a good website.
Yeah, they do a great job. Adam Pendergrass and Matt Mays, they do a great job, and it's good to hear that.
Yeah, and what I always wrap up with the last question here with all my guests. I think I know the answer, because I think you're on it all the time. What's the one piece of modern technology you can't live without?
Well, I hate it, but my BlackBerry. I mean, that's it blows my mind from years ago. I mean, you get your email, everything. I mean, and I don't like it, but you have to keep up with it from a recruiting standpoint, especially. And like with this tournament coming up, you know, I'm at practice today, and I'm arranging transportation pickups. I'm arranging tent put-ups. You know, it's almost you can't live without it, doing things like this.
You better have that battery charger ready to go next week.
Oh, I will, for sure, Rick.
It's not like back in the days when you were on coaching the Pro Tour. How many times did you have to run and find a payphone to call someone?
Oh, yes. I used to buy those when I was at Wimbledon or over in Australia. I'd buy those cards and run to a payphone, which I had to have the currency and coins from that country. And, oh, my gosh, it was a zoo.
When's the last time you used a payphone or saw a payphone?
You know, actually on campus today, I was walking. We're such an international university. We have one of those English payphones just in the middle of campus. And I was walking by that and laughing. I'll show you next week.
Sounds good. Looking forward to it. And and TroyTrojans.com for more information. And then on the tournament all next week, it'll be updated courtesy of me every day, TroyUSTA.com. Eric, we'll see you in a couple days. Good having you on, and you're a good representative of the university, and they're lucky to have a coach of your caliber, that's for sure.
Rick, thanks for having me, and looking forward to having you here.
All right, just hold on 1 second while I wrap up, and just want to let everyone know Netcast Studio has many other shows which may be of interest to you. You can head over to netcaststudio.com, check out the variety of shows available, all different subjects, technology, education, many other things, and also our partner network, RadioCSS.com. And also, if you're so inclined, the podcast awards are taking nominations now for the next week and a half or so. And under sports, you can nominate the Tech of Sports for an award. It would be going to podcastawards.com, and would appreciate that. And if you have any questions, you can contact me on Twitter at Rick Roswell if you want to know how to nominate the Tech of Sports for an award. Just want to let everyone know you've been listening to the Tech of Sports podcast, a Netcast Studio production.